The New Mexico Rural Heritage Oral History Project is a collaboration between anthropologists at New Mexico State University and the Oral History Program at the New Mexico Farm and Ranch Heritage Museum in Las Cruces, New Mexico. The goal of the project was to record the memories of New Mexicans who grew up in rural parts of the state in the first half of the 20th century. This podcast brings together some of those stories. After being ruled by Spain, Mexico, and the U.S. for nearly 300 years, the territory of New Mexico officially entered the United States as the 47th state on January 6, 1912. In this series of podcasts, we will share stories of New Mexicans who experienced life in the land of enchantment in the 20th century. Each of our interview subjects spent a good portion of their life in rural areas of the state. They were asked to describe their daily life as they knew it. We start things off with Lobeo Martinez. He was born in the 1930s in Dixon, New Mexico.
You know, I grew up in what you call a small country village with no facilities, no deprived, not even electricity, running water, inside bathroom. And, of course, you run around with your friends. You go horseback riding, go swimming in the creek, you know, stuff like that. Play marbles and tops, you know, the old primitive games and stuff. And we played basketball in a dirt court, not even concrete or inside, you know, and no television, and with a kerosene lamp on top of the table at night to do homework or to visit. Nice big fire in the winter. We always look forward to holidays like Thanksgiving and Christmas, stuff like that. But we also worked every day chopping wood, holding water, you know, and feeding the animals. I grew up, we always had hogs and chickens and cows, you know, mostly for beef and milk, a team of horses. That's the kind of life you had in those days. If it snowed, you'd get out there with a shovel and clean the yards, you'd get muddy. Just imagine being in a town with no electricity, no telephones, no paved road, no vehicles, you know, automobiles.
David Duran was also born near Dixon in 1945. Here is his firsthand account of growing up in the Embudo-Dixon area.
I don't remember a lot about my years in Dixon. It's a small village, all adobe-type buildings, narrow roads, dirt roads. Nobody had running water, electricity, gas, or anything like that. So I remember the outhouses and the wells, the water wells in the yard that were pretty shallow to get water. The wood stoves that you would use for cooking and heating and also for warming water. No toys.
No toys?
No such thing as a toy other than what you played with.
Up next is Bronson Springstead. Bronson was born in 1936 in Chaco Canyon, then moved to Springstead, New Mexico. He describes the importance of heating the home without electricity.
Well, the kitchen stove was a wood-burning stove, but it also would burn coal. Well, we had wood all the time for cooking in the summer, but in the winter, he'd have a load of coal delivered from Gallup and just piled on the north side of the house. And so you'd start that fire with the wood and then probably cook on that. But then the heat for the house, you put coal in there and heat the house. And there was no insulation. That house had no insulation in the roof. It was just the rock walls. And I always thought it was always cold. Anyway, they had built a fireplace there. But, you know, fireplaces aren't very efficient. But I can remember it would be so cold. My mother would, we had bunk beds, my older brother and I. So before we went to bed, she'd take a iron skillet and heat it on the stove. And then she'd go and lift the top sheet and run that iron skillet in between the sheets on both our beds before we got in bed. Yeah, it's kind of cool. It lasted for a little while.
Grady McCullough was born in 1928 in San Angelo, Texas. He moved to House, New Mexico when he was 2 years old. His family were homesteaders.
It was always fun keeping heat going during the winter. Another interesting jobs was picking up cow chips. Because just like the early settlers picked up as they were moving along, they'd pick up buffalo chips and toss them under the wagon. Well, on a weekend, we'd go out and one weekend and gather cow chips and pile them in piles. And then the next weekend, we'd go out with a wagon, bring in a wagon load of cow chips to give a little substance to those instead of just hauling out ashes all the time. We also went to the breaks, the edge of the cap rock, and got juniper and mesquite grubs to add as fuel to keep us warm. And then we'd add a little coal. We'd drop a piece of coal in, particularly in the cook stove in the kitchen, for longer burning, substantial heat, because the cow chips was real hot. And then
For those that grew up in New Mexico in the 1900s, water access didn't always come easy. These next few clips describe different ways they could collect it. Larry Gordon was born in 1926 in Oklahoma and moved to New Mexico in 1930.
I remember my grandparents, they had it in a, they had a windmill, and they kept it in the right below the water coming out of the ground. And I don't think we didn't have a system. We didn't attach as much importance to it as we do today.
Lonnie Harper was born January 2nd, 1936.
We had a windmill, and I can remember a storage tank. It probably held 1,500 gallons, and we put it on a stand that was probably 12 to 15 foot in the air, and it was a round tank. And we would pump water from the windmill. The windmill tower, as I remember, was 24 foot at the bottom of the tower, to where was the platform where we did the work. There was a little over 20 feet from that platform to the ground. And we would pipe it on up as high as that pipe would get, and then let it gravity flow over into the round tank. And since it was built up on stilts, we call it, or on a tower, it would give enough gravity flow. I can remember plumbing it, you know, putting a 1-inch pipe, a galvanized pipe, and running us a line and insulating the line so it didn't freeze.
Monty Shriver was born in El Dorado on September 28, 1934, and his family moved to Aztec in 1937.
What I remember about growing up was we had a cistern. Oh, we had an outhouse, of course. And we had a cistern, and we had a filtration system where they run the ditch water through two chambers filled with rocks. And they'd run the ditch water through this, and then it would go into the cistern, and then we'd add chlorine to it. Because I remember then we had a bucket that my dad would go out and just on a rope and drop it down and fill it up with water and bring it in, and there was a little cup there, and I had to stand on a stool, of course, to take the cup and get a drink of the water. And then whenever it was empty, went out and filled it, my dad filled it up again.
Luis Cabaldon was born in 1940 and grew up in Irizarry, south of Tijeras, in the 1950s.
I had some barrels out there to catch rainwater, and she used that rainwater for laundry. She liked that, she preferred that. And to wash their hair, they preferred that rainwater, because it's soft water.
Richard Chavez was born and raised in Puerto de Luna and works with the community as a board director of the New Mexico Rural Water Association.
Yeah, so that was our drinking water, and that was also the water that they used to cook beans. That was the only kind of water you could cook beans with. You couldn't cook beans with no other water because it was too hard, you know. But that water that came from the heavens was the best water for cooking beans and any other food that my mother cooked.
Up next is Lucille Roland Wolf, who was born in Artesia, New Mexico in 1925 and grew up nearby in Atoka.
The wood stove had on the side a thing, a boiler. It kept the water hot, the wood stove. So you just took the hot water out of the place where it got hot when you had the fire in the stove, put it in the tin tub and took you back.
Francis Beeman was born in 1930 and grew up in the communities of Malaga and Loving. Both are near Carlsbad, New Mexico.
One of the grocery stores had an overhead water tank, and we had no water in Malaga proper. They hauled water from Carlsbad on a railroad track, a railroad car, and pumped it into an overhead tank at what was called Bruce's store. It was a lady, a widow lady that owned that store, and she had an overhead tank, and they pumped the water into her tank, and she sold it by the barrel for 50 cents a barrel for people who were drinking water. Now, those of us that didn't have drinking water had to buy the water, or we had well water for other uses, for livestock and bathroom use and all that, but we couldn't drink the water.
Bronson returns in this next clip and shares a story about well water. His father, who went by the nickname Colonel, owned a trading post.
So he had him drill a well, 800 foot deep. 800 foot deep. And then they built a big cistern and they plastered it. And so when the windmill took off, it would fill that cistern. And so the Navajos found it was free water. So now the word got around that if you could trade with Colonel, you can take your wagons and your 100-gallon drums. They all had steel drums. And you could go up there and bale all up and fill all your water cans up for free. So that's a pretty good idea.
He also brings up pest control around the house.
Pests and stuff like that, you couldn't have mice. So we had cats, which was a good thing, but he also had two big bull snakes that he kept back there. And
that worked.
And that we kept mice free, I'll tell you that. Those bull snakes kept them cleaned out pretty good.
Billy Poindexter was born on March 31st, 1932 in Portales, New Mexico. Billy's parents moved to New Mexico on a wagon. They would later have 13 children. He recalls a close encounter with New Mexico wildlife on his way to school.
We had to walk a mile to catch the school bus, and we walked him back one afternoon. I was walking up the borer pit. You know what a borer pit is? It's on each side of the road where they can borrow dirt to make the road. I seen something crawling down in there, and I reached down and picked it up. It had a big head and body about that long, and I couldn't figure out what it was. So I looked at that, and he opened his mouth and had two fangs. It was a baby rattlesnake.
And you picked it up?
And I picked it up.
Oh, no.
And I was very lucky it didn't bite me.
Up next is Claude Leyendecker. His father was originally from Illinois and settled in New Mexico. He talks about keeping things cool from the New Mexico heat in the 1930s and 40s.
Keep things cool, we used ice when it was available, but like you say, our daily needs, if we couldn't get ice, we had spoilies. There's no doubt about it. Everybody had spoilies to a degree. Mother had some type of cooler in the window that on the north side of the house where the cool air would circulate.
Lonnie Harper also talks about cooling methods.
I can remember on the side of the kitchen window post on the north side of the house, and Mom had built up a little screen outside the window to keep flies and mosquitoes off, and then she would hang flour sacks. Flour came in a cotton type. Fact is, they liked to buy the flowers because the girls made dresses out of them. Sewing, it was important to the housewife to have all those cotton. Anyway, it was also a good, you could lay those, open them up and lay that out on them, and then sprinkle it with water and have the wind blow through there. Well, it was like our refrigerated cooling, our swamp coolers. It blow through there. And mainly that's where we keep milk and cheese, some of the things that, and there's a little cooler out there. And that was our refrigerator, was that little window out there with cheesecloth or that type of cotton.
Amado Mares was born in Taos, New Mexico, but shortly after moved to the family ranch in Black Lake, New Mexico, where he would live for 9 years.
We had to bring in wood, chop wood first, go out and chop it, bring it in, then we have to bring the water in, usually in the morning or in the wood, we bring it in the late afternoon.
Okay.
Yeah, so we wouldn't have to go in the morning. And then, but water, I remember doing the water. It was especially rough when my mother had to wash clothes. Had to bring in a lot of water when somebody was going to take a bath. Then she'd have to warm the, you know, use a lot of wood. And then we'd have to lock up the sheep so the coyotes wouldn't bother them.
Oh, yeah.
And after school, I had to help feed the cattle. And it's pretty cold in the winter.
Yeah, I bet.
We suffered quite a bit.
Felipe Baca was born in 1928 and spent most of his childhood living in La Cienega in Galisteo.
He used to cook, well, of course, beans, potatoes, meats, chili, and she used to make a white gravy and a brown gravy. And then we used the blue cornmeal, atole and chakewi. It's a blue cornmeal. It's made very thick, you know, and that you can eat that with salt or you can eat it with sugar, milk and sugar, you know. And since we grew all that, we always had a lot of blue cornmeal. And then the meat, you know, it was dried meat. And we used to have a metate, and we used to pound that meat to grind it down. And my mom would make meat with gravy, or she would make chili with that.
Returning once again in these next clips is Francis Beeman and Lonnie Harper, who each talk about experiences hunting New Mexico wildlife.
My dad had a rabbit drive one time where a bunch of people put together, and we heard it going down the road to kill rabbits because they were cutting down, eating up too much cotton when it was young. And he had this rabbit drive, and we killed, I don't know, thousands of rabbits. Before the war, we pushed them into an area where Black River ran into the Pecos, and so they had no place to go. We run them into that corner where there was no place to go, and had, 20 or 30 or 40 men with all kinds of guns, shotguns, rifles. So, yeah, we did a lot of hunting.
I don't think I ever went to bed hungry, but maybe a little bit lean. Maybe I didn't get all I wanted to eat. But what I remember the most from the time I was 6, 7, 8, and 9 years of age, the kids, we had a little .22 rifle, it was a single shot, about this long. All 8 of us kids had learned to shoot on that single shot .22 rifle. I can remember Dad, it had shorts, longs, and long rifles, .22 caliber. The shorts were cheaper. A box of 50 probably cost a quarter, but a box of long rifles probably cost a dollar. So he would count out 10 shorts and give them to me, hand me that little gun. We would go down to a canyon called John Taylor Canyon. It was full of cottontail rabbits. And me and my sister, that she was almost my age, she had her little .22, and he taught us how to creep around the sagebrush and the mesquite bushes. And it's full of those little cottontail rabbits. They're only about this long. You know, and not jackrabbits are pretty good size. But he said, now bring me 10 rabbits and shoot them in the eye. Don't waste any meat. Don't shoot them where there's meat. And we lived, I mean, I can remember many a day. That's what we ate was cottontail rabbit. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of them. I mean, you know, 4 or 5 at a time. I was, when I was a kid, but when we moved to Forest, I was already 15 years old, and I got to go deer hunting with a bunch of farmers around there. They would make up a wheat truck. You know, the 18, 20 foot bed on a wheat truck that they haul wheat in, the sideboards, 2.5, 3 foot tall, 300 bushel of wheat. They put a a tarp up over the top, like putting a tent on the back of that truck. Mm-hmm. And we'd go to western New Mexico to the mountain country, deer hunt. And I remember the season always lasted 10 days. And the school teachers and the coaches and what have you of the little towns around, they knew about this famous bunch from Forest, because we'd go to the Mogollons, which is, would be the Gila, and camp out for, we usually went for 2 weeks. We'd go three or four days early. And I got to go on several of those, and even though my dad didn't go with me, they found out I could shoot. I was good. I could shoot. And when I was 14 years old, I went with them there. We killed 10 deer, and I shot 9 of them. They said, put that kid out there on the front, because he never misses. I didn't. How could you miss a deer? That's a big old animal. I'm used to shooting wheat birds.
Clinton West was born on January 15th, 1941. He often goes by the nickname Doc West. His family moved to New Mexico from Westville, Oklahoma.
It was hard when we were on the ranch. Didn't have a lot of money. Mother would say something about, well, we don't have much to eat. Well, I'd go out there down at the dirt tank, and those rabbits come in at night to get a drink of water. I'd get a couple of three or four cottontail, skin them out, clean them up, put them cottontail for dinner.
In these last few clips, we get a glimpse of community and social life through a variety of stories, such as dances, kids playing neighborhood games, and even some village rivalries. Once again, here are Amado Mares, Luis Cabaldon, and Bronson Springstead.
Oh, we used to have a mailman, which we still do. He brought the mail on horseback from Ocotec, 18 miles away, every other day. And he'd sleep in a cabin here by the school, a real rough log cabin.
That'd be a tough job.
But he probably suffered in the winter.
Yeah.
In the summer is beautiful. Like on Fridays, I remember they had a lot of hillbilly music, and I walked from my house. I must have been 5, 6, 7 years old, to my uncle's, because he had a radio. We'd gather around and listen to the radio.
There was a rodeo normally on a Saturday afternoon, and after the rodeo, then the dance, and then after the dance, it was a gang fight. Because there was all these villages, Cabosa, Chilali, Tijeras, and Moriarty. All these villages would all fight each other. And up in Chilali, you'd see the rocks flying like it was hail.
Every once in a while, they would let me buy a comic book, you know, if we went to Gallup. And we learned about football. And I don't know, I bought this book, and it was all about football. And so we got to looking at this thing, and so we were trying to figure out something we could use for a football, you know. And so these kids came up with all kinds of things. I said, well, we could get, you know, next time we butcher, we could get a sheep's bladder maybe and fix it some way where it would be long, you know, like that and everything. And so my mom said, no. She just bought a football when she went. So we used to play football, and we had a great big wide arroyo about a quarter mile from the house, and we'd play in that sand, and we did not know the rules. All we knew is that you had the same number of guys on the same team, and we saw how they hiked the ball, and then whoever got the ball just ran, and you just smash the hell out of them.
And that's how you won.
that's how you won. So we played football. We used to play another game that was, I mean, it was pretty rugged area out in there. So we'd give one kid 15 minutes to go hide, and then we'd have to all go find him, you know. That became really a crazy, crazy game. And they do that now in Boy Scouts. Calls capture the flag is what it's like. But this one kid hid one day in a big pile of brush and pulled it over the top of him, and there was a rattlesnake in there. So that didn't become very popular right after that, because my mother had to take him to Rehoboth. So we decided maybe that wasn't a very good deal. And then war. Because the war was going, we'd pick sides and have these big wars, and it was just what was going on in the world.
Mary Ellen Warren was born in 1927 on the Sierra Grande Ranch where she grew up. We end this episode with Mary as well as Monty Shriver, who each talk about a few of their favorite games growing up.
Friday night was game night, and so we'd play dominoes or flinch, and Mother made cards, and she put the state on one and the capital on another one. And so we played states and capitals. You know, that was good learning, but we played states and capitals and dominoes, just plain dominoes.
You played capture the flag, and it was on each hill we'd build a big bonfire, and the flag would be there on a stick. And the arroyo in the center was the dividing line. And the idea was to slip up because you had a guard, and everyone else was crawling around in the dark trying to, we went that way and they came this way. And they were trying to, quote, capture the flag. And the idea was you'd slip up, grab the flag, and you had to get it across the arroyo. The first one to get the other flag was the winner.
That concludes this episode of the New Mexico Rural Heritage Oral History Project. All interviews were conducted or supervised by Kelly Jenks, Mary Alice Scott, Kayla Archuleta Brown, and Mariah Ballard. On behalf of New Mexico State University, I'm Jose Loera. Thank you for tuning in. This oral history project was made possible in part by a grant from the New Mexico Humanities Council. Additional funding was provided by the Loomis Foundation and the Southwestern Border Cultures Institute at New Mexico State University. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in this presentation do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities, the New Mexico Humanities Council, or New Mexico State University. The full interviews are available at the New Mexico Farm and Ranch Heritage Museum in Las Cruces, New Mexico. More information is available at the museum website at nmfarmandranchmuseum.org.